Good morning, if it is morning. This is Sven Gulli, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Good morning. This is Mark Voger, author of Monster Mash, the creepy, kooky monster craze in America, 1957 to 1972. And you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
October 13th, 2015. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflum.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. We are deep in the heart of October now, and there's so much fun. There's fall festivals and apple picking, and you go out and get your pumpkins. We're just gearing up for Halloween. That's all there is to it.
That's all we do at this point.
It's all we could talk about.
And we keep waiting for it to get really, really dark much sooner.
Yeah.
Because daylight savings time is coming up.
Right after Halloween.
Oh, good.
Thanks
grief.
To President Bush. Got to keep that candy industry moving. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And, you know, I took you out to a movie, Chip.
We all went.
We went to the Riff Trax Live, the Miami Connection, their 2015 version of their live show.
We should probably start off by saying, who is Riff Trax?
Okay, we can describe this again, just like we did last week. Riff Trax is the guys from MST3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000. They sit in the movie with you. They make fun of the movie in such a fun way that they have a lot of my money.
Well, I get it. They're very, very funny. And this movie, Miami Connection, which is a classic on its own.
Oh, yeah. A bad classic from 1987.
Seems like it was ripe for this type of humor.
Yeah, riffing on this one was pretty easy, I think. I think the guys had a lot of material to work with.
So let's describe this movie, because it seemed to have all the things that a great movie should have from the 80s.
All the great 80s tropes. We've got a group of ninjas in Miami. Perfectly
right.
Normal.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Lots of drug trade.
A lot of cocaine.
Well, only at the beginning, like this shipment.
Like they forgot about the drugs by the middle of the movie.
Okay, so they go from Miami, and then we're going to go all the way up the state, which is, it's not like it's like a two-hour drive or anything. I think probably 4 or 5 hours to get to Orlando.
Right.
At University of Central Florida.
Uh-huh. The University of Central Florida has a pivotal part in this movie.
Okay, so then we have a rock band.
Uh-huh. A really bad rock band.
Who sings a crazy song.
Just terrible.
Like We're Friends.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
With motorcycles and automobiles. Lots of mullets. With big, freaking bushy mustaches.
Yeah. A lot of shirtlessness. A lot of men walking around with no shirts on.
And lots of cursing that just seemed like the same cursing over and over and over again.
So it's not a good movie. That's why you know that you're watching
on.
A Riff Trax movie. But I...
And the acting was incredible.
Oh, the acting was so wooden. And so, and the
Korean martial arts expert,
yes.
One of the jokes that they made through it is that he must be from like some other part of the South. Because...
His language. He was not exactly good at speaking English in 1987, let's put it that way.
He was working with a coach. Mm-hmm. He obviously had picked up part of the accent.
He knew some of the sounds that made English.
And they had computers. They had a computer lab in there, and they came in fourth place, right behind Rochester Polytechnical Institute and Rice. I don't know who the winner was. But she was working on making a circle.
Yeah.
A circle.
Good job, 1987. I had so much fun at this movie. I brought you and my wife and my 9-year-old. He didn't make it through it. He slept through it. But
and no, most of you have never been to a movie with Steve. Steve doesn't just laugh. If you've ever listened to a laugh track,
I am the laugh track. Yeah.
Steve would have been a person who would have been perfect to be in Hollywood, and that would have been his job to be in the audience, because he laughs very distinct. Very distinctive laugh.
I have definitely a laugh that stops comedy shows. We've been in comedy shows where the comedian stops what he's talking about to comment on the fact that my laughter is so ridiculous. I find such joy in things. I love this movie. I was laughing the whole time.
You were. I had chuckles too. I chuckled out loud. I'm much more of a reserved person as far as my laughing. I think the scene scene where this gentleman is looking for his father. And he gives us this teary-eyed story about how long he's doing it. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It makes you laugh, and it's not supposed to. It's supposed to be touching.
And it sets up for later on what ends up happening. Oh, by the way, we forgot to mention the gory blood stuff.
Yes.
It's just... It's over... I mean, it's kind of like...
Ridiculously gory
Gremlins
blood stuff.
Gremlins type of... Well, I wouldn't say it's even on that level, but let's just say that it was there. It was very funny.
So we had a lot of fun, and we appreciate Riff Trax for all they've done, and it was amazing, and we're probably going to make it out to their next live show, which is in December. That is Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny?
Yeah.
No, the Ice Cream Bunny. The Easter Bunny. They couldn't even get rights to the word Easter, so that one's going to be great. Maybe we'll make it to that one,
too.
Couldn't
get the rights to Easter. I don't know.
You brought yourself to the movie theater, and you finally got to see The Martian. Tell me your first concept of the movie The Martian.
The Martian was a very believable story. Mm-hmm. It is, I think it was everything that you built it up to be. It's a very good film. Everything that I saw was plausible with today's technology. In fact, that was one of the things that there are some people who thought it was like a true story, like a retelling of an event that we sent someone to Mars, which shows that, in my opinion, that there is such an air of plausibility with this that I think that you immediately kind of just fall into it. This isn't Star Wars. It certainly isn't Star Trek. This is, all right, what if we did this, mm-hmm. and what would it be like? I thought that the performances were fantastic, and the idea of what you need to do, the number of jobs that you would have to be an expert on. So he was very lucky to be stuck on Mars being a botanist.
That is the storyline, is how are we going to make this happen? If one person was stuck on Mars, who would he have to be? The scientist might have been able to do it, but the fact that he was the botanist, mm-hmm. really turned the story.
And space in Mars is just not hospitable. I mean, he blew things up. Things happen to him. At some point, he has to go and dig up like some nuclear type thing to mm-hmm. keep warm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. What I do think that the one thing that was missed in this, that they could not have made it better. A movie is like this. You could not really show is the timing in between stuff. The amount of boredom that you would have had. It took months and months and months to get the planning together to build the rescue mission and how they were going to do it. I can tell you that people in the crowd were very emotionally captivated when the team decided to mutiny, mm-hmm. and ignore their orders. You got to see the public relations aspect of it that NASA was going through. I immediately also thought of Top Gun. Because if you know, there's nothing like volleyball.
I don't remember the volleyball scene.
But with Top Gun, it was originally offered to the Air Force to be the Top Gun mission. They turned it down. Navy took it on. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they set up recruiting stations right outside when you exit the theater. The recruiters were right there. Mm. You got all jacked up seeing Top Gun. NASA is jumping right on this. They said, this is a great book. This is a great film. It is plausible. We can do this.
Yeah, the science of it, that's the one thing that I keep coming back to with the book and with the movie. This is a science book wrapped in a fiction. The amount of mathematics that Mark Watney does in the book is reflected in the movie. Of course it's going to be different. Everything, all the details are taken out to make a movie out of a wonderful book like this. But the amount of real science that has to be done in this storyline is amazing. And it's
You're
enthralling.
Talking about the accounting to recognize how much food you can eat?
Yes, he does all of that accounting.
Sure.
And it's a much bigger part of the book. And yes, you're right, time moves differently in a novel than it does on a two-hour movie. It's not a two-hour novel. It's going to take you a lot longer to read because of those details. And yes, we could have made this into a mini series, but I don't think that it would have worked.
It doesn't need to be. This is a story that was fine the way it was told. If you haven't seen it, you should see it because
absolutely.
This is a very fascinating story. Immediately, the week that this movie was released, or the week after, NASA makes a announcement. They're going to outline the plans on our visit to Mars.
Well, remember, the week before it opened, NASA made the announcement that they found liquid water on Mars. So Mars is a big part of NASA right now.
Sure.
And the zeitgeist of us, we might see an actual manned trip to Mars.
Well, I'm sure we'll see it within our lifetime. There's no doubt that we will see that during our lifetime.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Our lifetime, not our children's lifetime, our lifetime.
Wow. Put your money down. You are in the October spirit, man. You've plunked down and watched Psycho, the 1960 original.
The Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock. Amazing film. Tell us about your adult view of Psycho.
All right. So Psycho was just re-released on Blu-ray, but Netflix didn't send me the Blu-ray. They sent me a DVD, which was fine. And I had forgotten a part of this film. You know, I remembered the hotel. I remember the house behind the hotel. Mm-hmm. I remember the death and stuff like that. I forgot the whole story. Why was she there? And the reason she was there is she stole money. And if we remember going back maybe a year or so ago, Anthony Hopkins had the Hitchcock movie where they talked about the things that the lengths that Hitchcock went to. He bought all the books for Psycho. Mm-hmm. So that no one would have a copy of it. I mean, he did a lot of crazy stuff to get this movie out.
He was quite a character. There's no doubt about that. And yes, that Hitchcock movie, which is just called Hitchcock, is a great view into that man and his brilliance.
Last year, I revisited some of the classic horror movies, Dracula and also Frankenstein, the Universal versions, not the book versions. This year, I've gone and I watched Psycho.
Nice.
So, very, very interesting. If you haven't caught up on an old movie like that, you should, because it's very different than the movies that we have today. Masterful film. Even the movie that they did a few years ago, or Vince Vaughn, where they recreated scene for scene, that was equally as good. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Opening this week, we've got a couple of really good sit-down, make-your-mind-work kind of movies. The first one's called Bridge of Spies, and this one looks really good. It features Tom Hanks as an American lawyer who is recruited by the CIA during the Cold War to help rescue a pilot detained by the Soviet Union, directed by Steven Spielberg, and written by the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan.
Well, I don't know if you could pick the fantasy football level of team right there. I think you've got a good team to put together a film.
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg seems to have his science fiction and fun films, but he also has his films that describe an era that he grew up in. And this is definitely going to be about the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
My generation may have forgotten what our parents went through during the Cold War. I mean, we were Gorbachev and the tear this wall down by Reagan and stuff like that. That happened during our lifetime. But we certainly were not in the height of the Red Scare where our parents were, they're in school and they had to go underneath their desk and all these other stuff that they were going through. Our generation doesn't have that. And I don't think our kids recognize that era and sort of the fear that was going on, that potentially communism was going to outpace the market-driven economy that we enjoy, that the Soviet Union, they were eating better, they were producing better science, they were beating us in everything, and we didn't recognize that it was all just a bunch of lies that we were getting.
Mm-hmm.
But that era and that feeling, it looks like we're going to get part of that.
I think it's going to be a great film. I'm not a big fan of courtroom drama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of Cold War drama. But again, that perfect team of Spielberg, Tom Hanks, and the Coen brothers, I'm definitely going to see this film.
It's going to be an adult film versus mm-hmm. many of the other things that we end up seeing.
The other one that you put on the list is also one of those really thought-provoking only for adults kind of film. This one's called The Experimenter, and it's the story of Stanley Milgram, who conducted a series of radical behavior experiments in the 1960s and tested ordinary humans' willingness to obey authority. This is a very interesting...
Well, if you took a psychology class, mm-hmm. you studied this, or you were introduced to this. The first thing I thought of when I saw this, we just had the Stanford experiment this summer as mm-hmm. as a movie drama that was very intense. Well, this one is very interesting. Milgram's studies and his experiment that he was using happened about a year after the Nuremberg trials. And what he was trying to figure out is how do you take ordinary citizens and get them to do grossly inhumane acts against other people. And this was the one where they had an authority figure standing behind the volunteer. Behind a glass was our person who was hooked up, and you were sending, with a push of a button, jolts of electricity through them. And each time they got something wrong, it got higher and higher and higher. Would you, as an ordinary human, put another person through torture? And what did they find out? Yes. 2/3 of the people would mm-hmm. do that.
Mm-hmm.
2/3 of the people didn't think about what they were doing. They basically
followed orders.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that is a very scary. How can Nazi type of event happen?
Very easily, as it turns out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is why the ability to think and think for yourself becomes such an important skill
mm-hmm.
because you don't have to follow what everyone else does. But 2/3 of the people were willing to watch people suffer, and all you have to do is identify those people, and what you could have, potentially, is a situation like the Irish famine, where they take all the food away from the Irish people, and they just let them starve. Or an event like what happened during the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
They basically blame one group of people. They take those people, they isolate them, and they basically use them as slaves and watch them starve. So this is a very interesting movie that I will definitely see. This I will see as soon as it's available. Hopefully it'll be available on iTunes or something like that. This is an independent release.
Very good. It's got Winona Ryder in it. It's got Peter Skarsgård. It's got Anthony Edwards. We haven't seen him in a while. It's got John Leguizamo and Jim Gaffigan as the guy who is pretending to be tortured on the other side of the glass.
Will Jim Gaffigan be playing a white pale guy?
I think so. So I think that this one has a lot of potential. Not as much potential as a Tom Hanks Steven Spielberg film, but it's right in there, and I'm definitely intrigued by the concept.
It's designed to make you think, and I think that's why we want to see it.
Like Miami Connection. Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week. And speaking of things that make you think, Chip, you want to talk about finding haunted houses around Chicago.
You love haunted houses.
I hate haunted houses, Chip.
Well, you're a person who loves the theater. What's the difference?
I do. I do love the theater. You're absolutely right. I do love the theater. I love the storyline. I love sitting down and watching somebody performing and doing this amazing thing. I hate haunted houses. I hate the concept of some squeaky voice teen dressed up in a scary Halloween mask, laying in the darkness, ready to scare me. What I really hate is paying for that.
Well, in fact, you're not just paying for it. Many of these houses are $25, $30, $40.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, it is. In fact, they could be more. You're right. But there are a lot of people who are adrenaline junkies.
Right?
They really enjoy these. On some level, they've moved beyond the JCs, where that maybe when we were kids and stuff mm-hmm. like that, where they get an old abandoned house and chop up some chicken gizzards or whatever it is.
Or the gymnasium at the local school or whatever it was, yeah.
They've gone much more professional, although yeah. JCs have created these professionally too. But there's not a way to organize them. And what I think was very interesting about this Haunted Chicago app that you can get, it's not available on Google Play yet, but it is available on iOS. What it does is it kind of organizes. So if you wanted to, you know, there's probably 100 and 200 of them available. the story on this is that these are apps that are meant to kind of be disposable. Mm-hmm. Maybe they come back. Maybe they're evergreens that come back every year.
Okay.
But really, they're pure just information. I need information today. I probably didn't spend a tremendous amount of time designing it. I just need to be able to get to the 150 haunted houses in Chicago in that area. Now, if you're listening and you're not in Chicago or can't get to Chicago, I'm sorry.
Yeah, really. You are. You're
missing
out. You need
to get
here because we have some really good food.
Winter's coming. And you can't.
That's a different show.
And you can't get enough winter. But and it only lasts 9 months of the year. So, and then we have spring baseball. I'm sorry. We have.
Oh, don't say baseball.
Okay. Doesn't really matter. But anyway, the point being is that you probably have one of these apps for your area, too. And this was based upon a website, hauntedhousechicago.com, that was originally designed for this.
Yeah, I question how many apps we need for these sorts of things. For me, I would just go to Google. If I was looking for haunted houses near me, I would literally say, okay, Google, haunted houses near me, and it would pull up a list. I'm not sure that I need to invest my time in getting an app like this.
Well, it kind of organizes it, and there's a whole bunch of them. You know, and there's things that they could do. I mean, you could have a checkoff list, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, there you go. That is the hauntedhousechicago.com's app, and you can find it on the iTunes store. Brings us to our book at our book of the week, and you are so happy about this book. You found a book called Monster Mash, the creepy, kooky monster craze in America from 1957 to 1972. This one's written by Mark Volger.
Created by Tomorrow's Publishing down in Raleigh, North Carolina. They do a lot of these types of books where they take either comics or they take some kind of era and they kind of put together a nostalgia piece.
So this is kind of like a coffee table book of just a lot of information, a lot of different images, and a lot of different words all put together.
Pictures, words, they do it all right there. This is not about the beginning of horror movies and stuff like that. That all took place in the 30s. This is this next generation, the baby boomers, and sort of they're rediscovering these classic type things and then making them their own. So this will discuss like television on the weekends where you had a horror host. This would talk about the Munsters and the Addams Family, the Scooby-Doo coming in. Yeah, it would talk a little bit about the monster rock albums that were coming out, like the Monster Mash. Mm-hmm. It would talk a little bit about the toys that we would have during those times, the funny cars that created, like the Batmobile would have been for the Batman 1966. Well, you know, the Monsters had their own automobile, mm-hmm. and Grandpa had his coffin.
Mobile, yeah.
So we get a little bit of nostalgia and kind of the flavor of that time. And this is an incredibly well put together, beautifully presented book. It's got a beautiful cover of this ugly guy in green. We should start off by having our foreword. It's by John Zacherle. And John Zacherle was a haunted host. And you may know him, but if you don't know him, he was sort of Svengoolie before Svengoolie. Mm-hmm. He was not our first horror host. Our first horror host was from Los Angeles, is what she would be. Her look basically inspired Elvira,
mm-hmm.
who we know from our youth as the Coors Light person, right?
I was watching Elvira way before she became a spokesman for Coors Light.
Well, here's your interesting little tidbit about John Zacherle. All right, so his character was developed originally in Philadelphia. It was called Roland, and he was eventually hired away and went to New York City. Well, during his time that this was being developed, well, American Bandstand with Dick Clark was also in Philadelphia, and Ed McMahon was also there. We know Ed McMahon because, I mean, all of us watched Johnny Carson, right?
Yes, you are correct, sir.
I don't know, man. If the people who are listening to this used to, well, maybe they used to watch to Johnny Carson.
I think most of our audience is middle-aged people.
You're saying that we're not really appealing to like your son's age?
I don't think my son listens to the show.
Your son would probably not know who, he probably doesn't know who Dick Clark is.
He probably doesn't know who Jay Leno is.
Well, Zacherle talks a little bit about that era, And the shows that were originally that they broadcast, these late night movies, were not offered to ABC, NBC, CBS. They were offered to independent stations, and many of those independent stations are the superstations of the time.
Yeah, they just needed to fill time. A lot of those independent stations needed to fill airtime, and these horror movies that were going into the public domain from the 30s were ripe for that spot.
And Zachary dressed in like an old long coat and with an ascot, and he put some makeup on to make him look like a creepy Igorish type of
ghoul.
Yeah, kind of the cool ghoul, right?
The cool ghoul.
Well, and since they were running live, they didn't have tape at the time. They would time it. So let's just say that there was a group of people with their picks, and they're going to go, let's go get this monster. Well, they'd flip over, and there's Zachary right there with his own pick going, yeah, let's go get him.
That's great.
These are still being used today.
Yeah, Sven Gulli still does that every week. He has a little bit of green screen action where he can put his face into one of the characters in the movie. But yeah, same idea.
Well, we also get an idea of where this genre sort of came from. What they use in this book is The Birth of Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. So that's from 1809. And he wrote things like The Raven, fun things to read during the Halloween season.
Oh, I love Edgar Allan Poe.
And our next book that they list is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. Bluka.
And Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was developed as she was just telling the story to entertain her group of friends who came to visit, right? Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was the beginning of this genre. She was convinced to write it down, and it became a sensation. We go to Dracula from 1897.
Say blah, blah.
Dracula. And then we kind of move on to the current stuff. One of the things that we got from that is that we had a monster scare. So they said comic books were creating juvenile delinquents. Well, we got a story and Leave It to Beaver. Basically, Beaver, along with his buddies, they went and bought monster sweatshirts. They convinced themselves that they were all going to wear them to school at the same time. When I say monster sweatshirts, I'm not talking about Dracula. I'm talking about they're just stupid drawings.
Yeah.
Beaver goes to school. His buddies chicken out. They do not wear the shirts. Beaver gets called in and has to go home because of, obviously, he's wearing this juvenile delinquent stuff. Mm-hmm. And anyway, out is born this genre. What can we say about it? We get an idea of the magazines that are supporting them. When we were kids, well, there was always the wrestling magazine where there was, you know, these two guys fighting each other and tons of blood, like, pouring down somebody's face. And right beside that would be the Famous Monsters magazine, where there'd be pictures of the Phantom of the Opera or whoever it was at the time. But they must have just written about the same thing over and over and over. And then there'd be a couple grotesque pictures in there and stuff. Were you a person who bought this type of magazine?
No, I was a big reader of Entertainment Weekly at that time, and I was really interested in the lives of stars and directors and producers, which I'm still interested in the lives of stars and directors and producers, but not to the same extent. Okay. I never bought a monster magazine. I never bought a wrestling magazine either, if that means anything.
I didn't either. That was not my... I mean, we all had things that we spend money on, but that was not those things. But I was aware of them, and it wasn't that I couldn't flip through them, but you know, I had buddies of mine who really liked, you know, one of these things or another. Everybody's got their little stuff. The rise of rock and roll also was at the same time this monster craze was going on. And so, you know, rock and roll was typically thought of as this juvenile delinquent music. What do you get from this? Well, eventually, in fact, one of my favorite stories from this book is Boris Pickett, who is singing the Monster Mash. That came from, he was in a rock band. They're kind of playing. And then, you know, before the breaks or something like that, he would sing as Boris, you know, some latest song. Because it did so well, someone suggested that they write a rock song. And the Monster Mash came out of it.
Yeah, and you posted on the Facebook this week the Dracula's Lament that Jason Segel wrote and got that stuck in my head for the entire day. Thanks for that.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. Earworm from Chip.
Well, the backing vocals of Monster Mash was Darlene Love.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the entire book, it talks a lot about these type of fun stories. Did you ever build models?
I built models, but I never did any humanoid. You know, I didn't do the monster models. I was doing cars and rocket ships, a lot of Star Trek stuff.
There's an artist that I kind of follow that has stuff on YouTube, and he'll give speeches on different stuff. And he describes his youth. I never bought these because I always thought they were too easy. Mm-hmm. And why would I do them? You and I just said that. But when this artist was talking about why he did it, I said, oh, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. He put it together quickly so he could get to painting them. So he would buy the Frankenstein one, paint it up, and say, you know, I like this or I like that. He would break it, buy another one, paint the new one.
Yeah, I was never into the painting of the models. That was one part of the art that I never got into.
Well, he would do them over and over and over again. So what did he do? He refined a skill. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And some of these, you know, we have Dracula and Frankenstein and Wolfman and things of that nature. And there's this artist that's being interviewed in here, and he created the pictures that were on the cover of those models. He many times took pictures from the movie sets to create these. Eventually, he got in trouble for that because somebody complained that the picture on the front and the model were not the same picture. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so he had to adjust in the future. He added the backgrounds, added all the language that would describe what monsters would be. They also had ones they had to pull off the shelf, like the guillotine. We have interviews with Boris Karloff in here. We talk a little bit about the cards and the pictures. We go through the Addams Family and the monsters. This book goes on and on and on, and just describing this craze that really, it wasn't me. But as I've gotten older, I have a nostalgia for it, and it is a great immersion into this period of time.
Yeah, I watched all that stuff when I was a kid. I was a big fan of Addams Family Munsters. We did our Addams Family and our Munsters show last year, so you can go back. I'll put it back in the show notes from last year when we talked about all that stuff and how much I loved it. And this is a great book. It's a great collection of all of those ideas.
It's a beautifully formatted book. You're right, it's sort of a coffee table type of thing. It's the kind of thing you throw out every year and kind of go through it and reminisce. Very nice.
Brings us to our Now the News. We've got lots of news this week. The first story is all about solar power.
Solar, baby!
How we can get free electricity. The idea of renewables, the solar and the wind power that we've been working on, we're finally getting to a tipping point where the widespread adoption is maybe going to get us there.
We'll see. We'll see. Still the challenge was storage. But, you know, Elon Musk and a lot of other companies out there have started introducing their battery packs to be able to store the energy. I think one of the real criticisms in the past, and still is today, maybe it's not understood, is that if you're using solar energy, it's not necessarily for that moment. The idea is to have that battery charged to use it for that time when you may not need it. So, you know, it's still expensive, but as we talked about last week, when we can start getting wind turbines coming down to $7,000-$8,000, mm-hmm. certainly it's not, you know, something that you could not, the average family couldn't afford. And if we can start getting these solar panels down to be very little, I mean, good for us.
You found a story about the world's first solar-powered airport. This is in India, and that's a pretty big jump.
It is. I mean, this is a solar-powered airport. They have 1,000 flights during a week. I wouldn't say that would be a busy airport on U.S. standards, but, you know, it's a good testing ground. One of the things that India has, very much like Texas, they got plenty of space, so you can throw out, you know, this farm of solar panels. I don't know if the United States would allow that type of farm to exist in areas that were populated. I mean, New York certainly couldn't. You couldn't do it.
Got a lot of desert.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have also a lot of rooftop. The point being is there are challenges to this. I don't think a bird flying over this is going to be able to survive. The heat would probably fry them. But, you know, somebody's got to try it, and they have an airport that's running, and it's working. So good for them, and maybe we can learn from them so that we can, you know, eventually adopt some of those standards or those types of processes here in the United States.
There you go. Your next story is about Comic Blitz. This is a comic service. It's kind of like a Netflix style, all you can read comic books.
Well, you know, we knew about Marvel Unlimited.
Right.
Which was Marvel's version, which is one comic company. Mm-hmm. But we've never had a Netflix type of approach where, you know, we had multiple comic companies coming together and you could read their stuff. This is one that's coming out. They do not have the three big ones, Image, DC, and Marvel. So this is more, I would say, more of an adult fare, as my guess would be. They do have stuff there that you can kind of read. I would guess that if somebody would be interested in it, they could go and try it out and see if they can find enough reading material. But it is a library. They are attempting to create a type of service where you would pay monthly. And if you're an independent publisher or an independent artist, you may need that type of revenue every month to be able to produce, you know, your physical copies or something of that nature. I think this is interesting. We'll see how it works. We'll see if enough people are willing to pay for it.
Enough people are willing to pay for Netflix, that's for sure. Netflix is raising the price of their most popular plan by $1 a month, going from $8.99 to $9.99 a month for their streaming.
Sure. I'm a Netflix person. For me, since I already pay for Netflix, they're going to ease me into it. I don't know exactly what that means, but eventually it'll just happen. But if you're a new subscriber, it's $9.99.
I am not a Netflix subscriber. I use Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. and I have virtually the same number of movies through that mm-hmm. and the free shipping. I don't see a point in getting both Netflix and Amazon Prime.
That is one of the real challenges. I think that is something that I'll have to consider. Not that this dollar is going to make a difference to whether I stream or not, but I like the, particularly through the Apple TV, how you go through and you can get to all the movies you want.
That is true. Amazon is not available on the Apple TV or on the Chromecast, like we talked about last week.
And I don't find, as much as I use the Fire TV stick, I don't find the scrolling through the movies to be as intuitive. Mm-hmm. That does not mean that the Apple TV software is perfect. It still is labor intensive. I mean, you're basically tapping out with the little remote every single letter as opposed to a keyboard.
Just pull out your iPhone and do it that way. Then you have a keyboard.
Okay. That's... Well, anyway, it's something to watch. One of the things they could do is price themselves out, because you're right. If you have Amazon Prime and you get the movies through Amazon Prime, it is duplicating itself, except for the original content.
Right, and that's where the difference comes in, is that original content. If you, as a producer, have original content that I want, like mm-hmm. HBO.
Like Daredevil? Or House of Cards,
right?
Or Orange is the New Black.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you have those special things that I want to get on board with, maybe I'm just going to get on board for when those special things are there, and maybe I'm going to jump out.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon Prime, they do have their originals.
Sure.
I've never watched one of them.
Really?
Not one. I'm into Amazon for the shipping, and I get this side benefit of these movies.
Understood. And streaming is such a wonderful, wonderful service. And in fact, something we didn't mention here is that Paramount threw a whole bunch of movies, hundreds of movies, available on through YouTube right now. And these are all legal to run. So if you've got the ability to stream through, you know, an iPad or something of that nature, or through something like a Roku or an Apple TV, then you can watch lots of movies for free. And all legal.
What's really going to change the world is not Netflix streaming. What's really going to change is self-driving cars. We are so close to the self-driving car. Toyota has made an announcement that they are going to have self-driving cars on the road by 2020. 5 years away from self-driving cars, Chip.
So Apple has said we're going to have an automobile by 2019. Toyota says we're going to have a self-driving car by 2020. Other companies have made announcements too. So the future is coming, and it looks like that we're going to be moving into a different way of using our automobiles. The driving that you experience right now may very quickly, and I would assume that it would happen fairly quickly as far as adoption, move to something where very similar to like motorcycle riding. It's kind of a weekend activity mm-hmm. where you go out and you do it yourself,
mm-hmm.
that type of stuff.
And a lot of things are going to change as a result of that. When that changes, there's going to be a whole slew of changes. We talked about how roads are going to change,
mm-hmm.
how everything is going to change very quickly.
Maybe how you own your automobile changes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't need an automobile if you have an automobile that comes pick you up.
And Volvo came out and said that they think that the manufacturers should take the liability on self-driving cars. This is a logical leap. If the manufacturer is making this thing that they say is going to be safe, if it acts in a way that is unsafe, the manufacturer should be liable.
Well, and we've talked about some of the challenges of making sure the systems are secure and things of that nature. We may end up getting adoption much more quickly than we think because insurance companies may force us to do so. And their agreements may be with the manufacturers. So Volvo and an insurance company may make an agreement on this is how we're going to be able, have to be able to do this. That we'll take the liability for the automobile as long as Steve's not driving it.
Yeah, that's good policy.
Well, my point being is that many of the accidents that have come from, not from the automobile failing, but from bad decisions or aggressive decisions or something of that nature that we humans make.
Yeah, humans are the problem.
We are at fault.
That's right. Get rid of the humans. Start with the lawyers. Microsoft had their event this week, and they really are pushing their hardware side. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has given us their very first Microsoft laptop. They're calling it the Surface Book, which doesn't make any sense to me. I don't like that name, but they thought it was a good idea. And they have all sorts of hardware from the phone all the way down where you can have the same Windows experience no matter which device you pick up.
This is very Apple-like. They're coming from a little bit different direction, but Apple basically has always controlled their manufacturing. Microsoft has usually outsourced it and let other people control that. And because of that, they ran into a number of challenges. Mm-hmm. And Google has run into the same challenge with their Android devices. So it looks like that by taking over some of the manufacturing, that they're going to be able to create that, you know, what they call the Windows Signature Edition. They put on their software. They're going to run it the way that they think is pleasant to the user experience. Since we all use Windows devices most of the time, there really is an opportunity to have us really use those. Where I also thought was very interesting is their phones that they were releasing. They are Microsoft branded.
They are Windows phones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what I think that was really interesting is that price was an area that they were going to push these. And the pricing points seem to be much less than an iPhone.
Well, Apple has always been strategically high priced. They strategically think that if you are paying more for this product, you are going to want it more. It's going to be more important to you.
Okay.
A low-priced item might be less significant.
But if you are working in the Windows world, mm-hmm. if you're working in the Microsoft world, having a phone that works similarly, that the logic works similarly, seems to be pretty attractive. If Apple's going to be vulnerable, these are the type of moves that really could expose them. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. Microsoft in the past has found a way to fumble a lot of stuff. But that doesn't mean that we're not happy. My goodness, I've worked on my work machine is Windows. I use it all the time. I mean, I certainly don't have complaints about it.
Right. The other way more important piece of information.
Way more important?
Way more important because it involves my wallet. The way more important announcement at this week's Microsoft event was finally the announcement that the Microsoft HoloLens is going to the public at a $3,000 price point. This is the first holographic computer. It's going to change everything about computing. Everybody who's touched it, everyone who's tried it, has said it does everything that you imagine it to do. It is that Iron Man computer where you're waving your hands in the air and using a computer on a screen. And $3,000 is going to be tough, but this is the developer's kit. This is not ready for prime time.
So this
going
is
to
not,
Target.
This is not for Steve at home, except for if he wants to play.
This is for Steve at home. This is not for Chip at home.
That's right. I probably will not purchase this.
Until I will.
I know you will. And yet, you know what that means? I get to come over and see it.
Yeah, I will definitely have a hollow suite set up down here in the basement, and you can walk around and do all the things.
And for those that want to know what it's like, just go to Star Trek and watch the holodeck.
Yep, Star Trek The Next Generation. That is what we are headed towards, and it's amazing to think that we are already getting there.
Oh, it is amazing. And this is, it truly is an interesting, where your environment becomes your computer in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. I think this is an important step. You can see where, you know, very quickly, in fact, the beauty of computing, of computers in general, is the price drops and the adoption comes quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a good idea, we'll adopt it quickly.
I would say that you're going to see these on store shelves within 12 months.
Really?
Yes. Because once they've gotten to the developers and had the developers make the software to run on the system, it's going to go really fast.
So what do you think? Do you think that within 5 years we'll all be using something similarly?
I don't know how fast the adoption's going to be, but it's going to be quick.
Okay.
I think that this, at least this idea, is what we've been headed towards with all sorts of technology. The future is amazing, and we have so many science fiction ideas of what's going to happen next, and Star Wars is coming out at Christmas, Chip.
Star Wars is coming out on Christmas.
Every episode of Star Wars, somebody loses a limb and has to have a robotic arm as a replacement. Too bad we can't do that now.
Really? We can't?
Oh, you found a story about Open Bionics that they have unveiled a Star Wars Marvel and Disney-themed prosthetics for kids. This is an amazing story.
We still are trying to create limbs that look like real hands or real arms and things of that nature. But what if we could do something else? What if you could be Iron Man, have Iron Man's hand?
Yes.
What if you could have, you know, from a Star Wars character, a guy that holds a lightsaber?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you want to be a person from Frozen.
Hmm.
Well, it looks like that Disney has granted this company rights at no additional fee to create these limbs with hopes that they'll be adopted by these children, and the children will have joy.
A little bit of joy. A little bit of joy. You can imagine what life would be like if you were a kid and you had a physical difference from the rest of the kids.
Sort of a challenge.
It's a challenge. And just the joy of walking into school with your R2-D2 arm. It makes me smile just thinking about it. You saw the video of Robert Downey Jr. giving the Iron Man arm to the little boy. It's amazing the amount of joy that we can bring to a person. And that's what it's all about, Chip.
Well, this is really kind of special and unique and a great way of using your imagination and the tools of today.
It's like being back to the future.
Oh, maybe at another time.
Maybe next week. Maybe next week we'll talk about Back to the Future, because it happens to be late October 2015.
Oh my goodness. And the Cubs are in the playoffs.
Oh my goodness. It's all coming together. Oh, we just need to get some Mr. Fusions. All right, Chip, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can definitely come back next week. This week's Too Much Scrolling is executive produced by Amanda Micah. Join others in supporting this free and independent production through our links at TooMuchScrolling.com, at our Patreon page, Patreon.com/TooMuchScrolling. You can go to our Amazon store, Amazon.TooMuchScrolling, or our eBay store, and you can support this show just like Amanda did. Thank you, Amanda. I hope we're doing a good job, boss. If you want to reach us, if you want to find more information, you can go to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. You can send us an email. You can send us a text at 805-4104-TMS. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And you can go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com, every day of the week to find out all the information that you need to survive another week. I want to thank you again for tuning to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
We'll see you in the future.
Oh,